Second lecture I want to show. I want to take you to Orissa and want to point towards the strong possibility of the works on the ritual practices in Jagannath Temple, and especially the texts which deal with the daily puja ceremony in the Jagannath Temple. They had a model, or they based their text on certain texts which have their origin in Kashmir. So this their special way of offering worship, etc., it has a very strong Kashmirian influence. Because it's not a purely Vaishnavite practice, it's not purely based on Pancharatra Sanghitas, though they claim it very often that it's based on Narada Pancharatra. But which Narada Panchara they mean, I don't know, because under this term Narada Pancharatra, many texts go, especially this Padma Sanghita and some other Sankarshan Sanghita, all these many other Sanghitas, they also are known as Narada Pancharatra. But there is very little element of Pancharatra, in fact, in the ritual which is practiced in the temple, neither in these annual ceremonies which take place occasionally on different festivals, nor in the daily puja ceremony do we find much influence of the Pancharatra Sanghitas, especially those Pancharatra Sanghitas which originated in South. I think that the earliest Pancharatra Sanghitas originated anyway in Kashmir, and the three Ratna, there is a strong possibility. I think Otto Schrader had also indicated towards this possibility. I mentioned this here in this paper too. So I start with a personal note. In the year 1990, when I was preparing to perform the sacred thread ceremony of my son, I was looking around for some genuine and old manuscripts of any Upanayana Paddhati, so that the ceremony may be performed according to the well-established traditions of our Vedic Shakha. As you know, Brahmins have, they belong to different Shakhas, and their ritual is to be performed according to the Shakha to which they belong. So we belong to the Vajrasaneyi Shakha of Yajurved. And so I was looking for any paddhati which has the mantras from our own shakha, and which describes the ritual according to the kalpa or according to the dharma sutra of our shakha. I got two manuscripts from the house of a family friend, which were either copied or composed in the middle of the 17th century, as was evident from their colophons. The most interesting statements in these manuscripts which struck me was the instruction given at the end of the ritual that immediately after the Upanayan ceremony, the Brahmacharin should proceed to either Kashi or to the land of Kashmir for the sake of studies. Tato adhyayanartham Kashim Kashmiran va gachet. What was especially interesting for us was the mention of Kashmir with great respect in the works belonging to the 17th century as a great center of learning and Brahmanic education, even after it had already remained occupied by Muslims for 500 years at that time. That Kashmir was really such a center for almost all branches of Brahmanic as well as Buddhist learning till about 14th century need not be mentioned here to you scholars. Writing in the mid-12th century, Sriharsha, the celebrated author of the Naishadhiya Charitam, proudly declares that here is a kavya which has been examined and highly appreciated by even those scholars of Kashmir who are well-versed in all the 14 branches of learning. Kashmirai mahite chaturdashatayim vidyam vidadbhir maha, etc. The tradition of learning in Kashmir starts already in the early centuries before the birth of Christ, when, thanks to the missionary efforts of Ashoka and later of Kanishka, it became a very important center of Buddhist learning. Many Mahayana Sanskrit texts, especially those of the Yogacara Vaibhashika schools of Sarvastivadins, were composed here, which is spread out from here not only towards Gandhara, but also reached Central Asia and China through Buddhist monks. However, the contribution of Kashmir is not limited to Buddhism. Side by side with the philosophy of Buddhism, a great flare-up of devotional Brahmanism also took place in this region. The wonderful works on different schools of Shaivism and Shakta Tantrism that the genius of such scholars as Vasugupta, Somanand, Kallat, Utpal, and Abhinav Gupta produced are well known and much studied all over the world. But what is less known and has remained overshadowed by such works is the Vaishnava literature of Kashmir. It is not so widely known, for example, that the oldest of the Pancharatra Sanghitas originated here. Yamunacharya, the preceptor of Ramanuja, writing in the 11th century, sitting in distant Tamil Nadu, refers to Pancharatra as Pancharatra system as Kashmir Agam, in his famous work Agam Pramanya. All the earliest three Sanghitas of Pancharatra, Satvat, Paushkar, and Jaya, seem to have been composed in Kashmir, as the internal evidences suggest. In the context of describing the placement of the various deities on an Ashtadal Kamal, Paushkar Sanghita, for example, refers to the river Ganges as flowing in east, Yamuna in southeast, Saraswati in south, Narmada in southwest, Iravati in the northwest, Sindhu in north, and Vitasta in northeast. The location from where one perceives these rivers is precisely Kashmir. About another Sanghita, Jaya, its editor Mr. Bhattacharya has already drawn attention to the fact that the mystical epithets of the letters of Sanskrit alphabet, as mentioned in the Jaya Sanghita, refer to that particular form of the letters of Brahmi alphabet as it was prevalent in the northwest of India in or around the 4th century. It was in fact Otto Schrader, as I told you, who first drew our attention towards the Kashmir origin of the early Pancharatra texts, including his Ahirbhudhnya Sanghita in his pioneer work Introduction to Pancharatra and Ahirbhudhnya Sanghita. We have it here. It was published in 1916. Since then, other scholars have also worked on the subject, and now even the texts like Lakshmi Tantra and others are believed to have originated there. There were a number of Vaishnava temples in Kashmir during the Hindu period, and a number of Vaishnava icons are still available in museums as testimony of once a flourishing cult of Vishnu. Sufficient literature is available on the Vaishnava iconography of Kashmir. There were even attempts to explain Spanda Shastra in the light of Vishnuism, and the Spanda Pradipika of Utpala Vaishnava. There are two Utpalas. One was Shaiva, the other is Vaishnava. One was the guru of Abhinavagupta. The Spanda Pradipika of Utpala Vaishnava, a commentary on Spanda Karikas of Kallat, by this senior contemporary of Abhinavagupta may be cited as an example, which is full of quotations from Pancharatra texts. Mention may be made in passing to the Nilamata Purana as well, a purely Vaishnavite text composed in Kashmir, and to the Vishnu Dharmottar Purana, for which also such claim is made with good reasons. Presence of Shaivism, Vaishnavism, Shaktism, and also the remnants of the philosophy of Buddhism side by side, and almost contemporaneously in Kashmir, lends a very special character to a number of works composed here, which is marked by an unusual syncretism and symbiosis. A few years ago, I happened to edit a philosophical treatise called Swarupa Prakasha, a copy of which I have given to you, by one Sadanand, who bears the title Kashmirik with his name. Swarupa Prakasha is supposed to be a work on Advaita school of Vedanta, and is meant to be dealing with the Swarupa, that is the true nature of Brahman, Jiva and Maya, that is, you know, supreme consciousness, individual soul and creative energy. While describing the nature of supreme consciousness in the latter half of the work, however, Sadananda tilts more and more towards Vishnuism and says that this supreme consciousness, Brahman, is totally identical with absolute unqualified form of Vishnu, who is known as Paravasudeva in the Pancharatra system of thought. According to him, pure and undiluted knowledge, which leads to the realization of absolute identity of soul with God, can be attained only through love full devotion, bhakti, loveful devotion to Vasudeva. It is the bhakti which leads to jnana. Bhaktir jnanaya kalpate. Bhakti leads to knowledge. This became also the motto of most of the saint scholars of Vedanta in North India, at least from 15th century onward. Have you seen the Siddhanta Bindu of Madhusudan Saraswati, the Mangalacharan verse? This is a very terse work on Vedanta. And it starts in Mangalacharan. He pays obeisance to Krishna. Vanshi Vibhushitakaran Navaniradabhat Pitambarat Arunabimba Paladharoshthat Purnendu Sundar Mukhad Ravinda Netrat Krishnat Param Kimapitattvamaham Najane. And then he starts with his Vedanta. The supreme principle is equated with this unqualified highest form of a person of usually in the Shivadvaita of Kashmir. It's a little different that where the supreme principle is equated with the unqualified highest form of the person of Lord Shiva. It appears that in Kashmir, a parallel current of equating the highest divine principle with Vishnu was also available, which finds its reflection in the Swarupa Prakash of Kashmirian Sadananda. After having worked for quite a number of years on the ritual literature of Orissa, especially on the texts related to the cult of Jagannath, I have had the occasion to go into the content and to look for their original sources. Taking first the case of the consecration of the temples and the images, it struck me first that quite a number of texts on the pratishtha of the temples and images, whether Vaishnava, Shaiva or Shakta, mention the name of Hayashirsha Pancharatra, as their prime source in their very title or in colophons. Thus we have Hayashir Shokta Shaiva Prasad Pratishtha Vidhi, Hayashir Shokta, etc., Netra Pratishtha Vidhi of Purushottam Jagannath and Subhadra, as well as Ratha Pratishtha, according to the procedure prescribed in the Hayashirsha Pancharatra. Since no Pancharatra text was ever produced in Orissa, the question naturally arises how the Hayashirsha Pancharatra come to be so honored in Orissa, and where does it come from in the first instance? Further, it may further be remarked that as far as Jagannath Purushottam is concerned, the manuscripts which describe the ritual of consecration of its images as well as of its chariot according to Hayashirsha are much older, and they have been gradually replaced first by the manuals composed in accordance with the Pratishtha Pradeep of Narasingha Vajpayee, who was a resident of Puri, an outstanding scholar of Dharmashastra belonging to the second half of the 16th century, because his work gives due importance to the local practices of Orissa as well, which was not the case with Hayashirsha Pancharatra. And these texts are still later replaced with the puja paddhatis composed in accordance with the Haribhakti Vilas of Gopala Bhatta, a Goswamin of Vrindavan, who was a direct disciple of Chaitanya. It's a nice instance to show that the rituals connected with a temple or deity are not static or rigid, but get modified according to the changing times and changing religious spirits or ideologies. Back to Hayashirsha Pancharatra, which is unfortunately not yet fully published. Only first Kanda out of four is published twice, once from Rajshahi in Bangladesh, and then once more from Asiatic Society, Calcutta. It is this, the first one is the Pratishtha Kanda or Adi Kanda, and the other three are Sankarshan, Ling and Saura. The second and third describe the features and consecration, etc., of Vaishnava and Shaiva images respectively, and the fourth is devoted entirely to the rituals connected with Sun God. So this is a Pancharatra Sangita which is not fully devoted to the description of the ritual and philosophy of Vishnu. But it has got four kandas, and the first kanda is Pratishtha Kanda, how to consecrate the images of different deities. Then there is a kanda especially devoted to Vishnu. Then there is a kanda especially devoted to Shiva. And then one to Shakti Devi, and the last one to Sun God. Hayashirsha has been dated differently by the two editors, and the period ranges from the 6th to 8th century. The Pancharatra texts of this period, originated outside Kashmir, do not treat Shiva, Mother Goddess, and Sun God in a single text and concentrate mostly upon Vishnu. Treatment of the ritual of Sun God is also very rare. In this latter half of the first millennium, sun worship was mostly prevalent only in the northwestern part of India and in Kashmir, where the ruins of the great temple of Martanda, today called Mattan, built by Lalitaditya, still stand. But the most significant evidence for the northwestern, or let us say, the Kashmirian origin of Hayashirsha is provided by reference in the context of the worship of the goddess of speech in form of manuscripts. This appears in the second Kanda, which is not yet published, but since I have transcripts of the rest of the text, I quote it from here. It says that for the sake of writing the manuscripts as an offering to the goddess of learning, one should use either Kashmirian or Sharda characters or the Nagari script. Raupya patre mashim sthapya lekhanya hemaya shuchi Kashmirair Nagarair varnai samashirshai samanshakai snigdhair natikshai sthulai rasva dirghadi lakshitai lekhayet lekhako dhiman shabd shastra visharada. Now this particular sanctity attached to Sharda and preference given to it leads us to Kashmir as the likely origin of the text. When had it originated in Orissa, they would never say that you worship goddess, you offer a manuscript written in Odia character or Kashmir. They won't have said that you should use Kashmirian text, because nobody in Orissa knows Kashmirian, the Sharda script. The mention of the thickness of the letters, ink and ink pot, etc., also indicate that it could not have originated in a region where manuscripts were prepared on palm leaves and scratched with a stylus. Hashish Pancharatra was not available in Bengal during or till the 12th century. The editors of the Asiatic Society edition of the first Kanda draw attention to a reference in the Math Pratishtha Tattva of Raghunandan, a Dharmashastra writer of 16th century, very famous of Bengal, in which he says that King Ballal Sen got a copy of Haishisha sent to him from somewhere, which was written in Dvikhanda script, which the pandits in Bengal found difficult to read, decipher. It seems that it was a script which was not so commonly known in Bengal and could well have been Sharda. Now, Hashish Pancharatra is the only ancient work which describes in the 8th patal of its second Kanda the Pratishtha or the consecration ceremony of the Purushottam aspect of Vasudeva, as it states, Ata urdham pravakshyami pratishtham tava sattama pratpurushottama rupasya vasudevasya tam shrunu. The text proceeds with the remark that though Purushottam could have 8 arms, I shall however be describing the pratishtha of a 4-armed and a 2-armed one. The 4-armed one should have the mudras, the gestures, abhay in the right upper hand and discus, chakra, upper left. And the lower arms should show mace, that is gada, in the right and conch in the left. This form, in other words, is perfect Madhava form of Shiva. There are 12 such forms. About the 2-armed ones, it says that it has 2 varieties, the one having Shanti or Abhay in the right hand and discus in his left hand, and the other having a mace and discus in these 2. The first one has Shri and Pushti on his either sides, and the second form has Lakshmi and Saraswati as his consorts. If you have been to Indian Museum or some museum in Calcutta, you would find that the Pala images in Bengal and in Bihar, They show Vishnu with the two consorts, two wives, Saraswati on the left side and Lakshmi on the right side. The Vishnu image is of course much bigger, and these are smaller figures. And Sri Harsha also mentions in the, when he refers to Saraswati, Devi Pavitrit Chaturbhuja Vama Bhaga. This is the epithet that Sri Harsha in Naishadhi Charitam gives to Saraswati. Saraswati always usually is supposed to be consort of Brahma, but in the mythology and the religious beliefs of Bengal or Gauda, she is one of the wives or consorts of Vishnu as well. The second variety should be accompanied by this Lakshmi and Saraswati variety should be accompanied by Balarama as well as Bhadra or Ekanansha close to him on his right. Ekanansha is one an integer, one who is partless. Eka and Anansha is the name of goddess Shakti of Krishna, who was born, who under the instructions of Krishna took birth as the baby daughter of Yashoda, and who was then smashed again against a stone, against a wall by Kansa, and then she went up and she showed a form with eight arms and said that the person who would kill you is already safe, he's already born and he lives somewhere else, so there is no use killing me. So this is the Devi goddess Ekanansha. Originally, this Jagannath triad had Jagannath, this is Vasudev, Krishna, Balaram, and Ekanansha was later identified with Subhadra, sister of Krishna, who was married to Arjuna. But it's called Subhadra, it's also deemed as Subhadra today. But if you read Harivansha Purana, if you go to the older text, you would find that this female image in the middle of these two figures, male figures, is Ekanansha, this goddess. In fact, Balarama is identified with Shiva, Jagannath is identified with Vishnu, and Ekanansha is identified with goddess, mother goddess. So, Vishnu has other consorts also. I think if you read Pancharatra text, then Lakshmi and Vasudhatri or Dhara or Earth goddess is also considered as one of the wives of Vishnu, and Vishnu is supposed to be husband in inverted commas of the world, because he's the protector of the world. So, and if you read this Bhavishya Purana, you would find that with this union of Varaha form of Vishnu and Dharitri goddess, an Asura is born, Narakasur, etc. etc. The story goes further. So, these the puja paddhatis of Jagannath, they also have mantras for the worship of this goddess Vishwadhatri, earth, as consort of Vishnu. It is obvious that Haishirshapantra is not describing here the present wooden deities of Jagannath temple, but indicating towards a combination of this trio as we find in the side shrine of the Lingaraj temple, which contains most exquisitely carved stone images of the configuration of Jagannath Purushottam in normal human or divine form, and the like of which existed in the Anantavasudeva temple of Bhuvaneshwar, built by Chandrika Devi in the year 1278 AD. Another very important source work for the ritualistic text of the Jagannath temple appears to be Sharada Tilak, manuscripts of which are commonly available in Orissa. It's the only text which describes four different aspects of Vishnu, of which Purushottam is one. The epithet Purushottam represents that particular category of Vaishnava deities which comprise in its group Shrikar, Krishna, Kama, and Trailokya Mohan. The last one of these is the most important one and contains in itself elements of love and beauty. It is the one which bears the epithet of Purushottam. According to the texts of Sharada Tilak, he should be depicted in his aspect with Lakshmi sitting on his left thigh in tight embrace. The Haishirsh Panchratra and Sharada Tilak share with each other the mantra with which Purushottam Trailokya Mohan, one who charms the whole world, all the three worlds, Trailokya Mohan. Mohan is also an epithet of Krishna. So the mantra is common. The mantra, the HSP and ST share with each other the mantra with which Purushottam Trailokya Mohan is to be worshipped, placed on a Chakrabja Mandal along with Lakshmi, Mandal, Padma, with the in many circles around, so Chakrabja Mandal. This dual or combined representation of Vishnu and Lakshmi, the Yugala Murti, is much less common in Indian art than the Uma Maheshwar representation and is found mostly in Kashmir and Orissa only. Vishnu, Lakshmi sitting on the thigh of Vishnu. Parvati, yes, with Shiva, but Lakshmi, very rare. And in Orissa, you find it quite often, Chaurasi temple and in Kashmir also. However, there is a marked difference in these two texts, this Haishirsh Panchratra and Sharada Tilak, with regard to the description of the images to be consecrated along with Purushottama. Whereas the Haishirsha makes explicit mention of Balarama and Ekanansha Subhadra along with the statue of Purushottama, the Sharada Tilak does not make any reference to these siblings, brother and sisters of Purushottama or Krishna. This is one of the reasons which prevents me to agree with the view of certain scholars who have hinted at the possibility of the work Sharada Tilak having been composed in Orissa or some nearby southern region. Had it been the case, the two additional images of Balarama and Subhadra must have been mentioned in this context, which is not there in Sharada Tilak. In fact, the Sharada Tilak does not describe the mode of worship of these two deities anywhere in the text. In support of the Orissan origin of the Sharada Tilak, it has been pointed out by my friend Stephen Krohn that the description of a very rare form of Vishnu called Dadhivaman, which is available in Orissa but is unknown elsewhere, is found only in this text. It is true that Dadhivaman is found only in the Sharada Tilak. In Orissa, wherever Jagannath, but what is Dadhivaman? In Orissa, wherever Jagannath is enshrined in the sanctum as a single and a small worshipable figure without Balaram and Subhadra, he is termed as Dadhivaman, dwarf, Dadhivaman, a dwarf connected with yogurt or whatever. Professor Stephen Krohn takes it as an argument to place the origin of Sharada Tilak in Orissa. However, on closer examination of the concept and character of Dadivaman, as described in the Sharda Tilak, would reveal that it has little to do with Jagannath. Dadivaman of Sharda Tilak is a different deity signifying the child form of Vishnu, baby form of Vishnu. He is to be meditated upon as a child, having white complexion and beautiful curly black hair, wearing jewel necklaces, sitting in the orb of moon, holding two golden jars in his hands, one of which contains curd rice and the other pure water. After repeating a specific mantra for a certain number of times, the devotee offers oblations of either milk rice or curd rice in the sacrificial fire for him. All this is totally different from the form, appearance, and concept of Jagannath. In fact, the nomenclature of Purushottama for the wooden statues of Jagannath and of Dadivaman for his single appearance, etc., have been borrowed from older standard and authoritative Sanskrit texts in order to elevate these tribal statues to the status of classical deities. The Purushottam Trailokya Mohan of Sharda Tilak is also not identical with present Jagannath in the Puri temple. The traditional view of Lakshmana Deshik, the author of Sharda Tilak, having been a disciple of Utpal the Shaiva, that is 980, does not seem to be trustworthy. However, there should not be any doubt as to the fact that Kashmir is the most likely place of its origin, of Sharda Tilak. The work may not have been composed in the first half of the 10th century, as the tradition makes us to believe, because it confounds Lakshmana Deshik, the author of Sharda Tilak, with Lakshmana Gupta, the teacher of Abhinav Gupta and a disciple of Utpal, but probably much later, say in the 12th century. However, certainly prior to the composition of the Kramadipika of Keshav Bhatt, which is the main source of the puja texts on Jagannath and which is highly indebted to the Sharda Tilak. So Sharda Tilak is the main source for the Kramadipika, and Kramadipika is the bedrock on which all the puja paddhatis on Jagannath are based. Kramadipika was composed sometime in the first half of the 14th century by Keshav Bhatt, Kashmirik. Keshav Bhatt was a follower of the Nimbark school of Vishnuism and lived in Mathura. Many of his scholarly works written in Sanskrit are available, including a commentary called Kaustubh on the Bhashya of Nimbark on the Brahma Sutras. His detailed life history is available to us. Poet Nabhadas, that Hindi poet Nabhadas, 16th, 17th century, has mentioned in his Kavya Bhaktamal, which is a metrical work in Hindi containing biographical sketches of Vaishnava devotees, that Keshav Bhatt lived for long in Kashmir and studied there, which gave him the opportunity to absorb Kashmirian scholarship. Kashmir ki chhap pai sagale jag mandan, dridh hari bhakti kuthar, an mat vitap vikhandan. From Kashmir, he got an imprint of Kashmir and became famous. And with his axe, battle axe in the form of Hari Bhakti, he could cut to pieces all other the beliefs of all other sects. He, however, does not mention from which part of India the scholar hailed and whether he was a Kashmiri or a local North Indian. However, the surname Bhatta, which can be appended to the name of every Kashmiri Brahmin, is not common in North India, although frequent in Gujarat and Karnataka. It is possible that he started using this other epithet, Kashmirik, with his name to distinguish himself from many other Keshavas living around, because this name is quite common. However, the fact remains that the extremely systematic description in a very fine literary language and meters of the puja of Sri Krishna in his work Kramadipika is by and large of Kashmirian origin. The contents of the work, with a lot of tantric mantras and dhyanas taken from the work composed in Kashmir and especially from Sharada Tilak, several nyasas with excessive use of matrikas, these are the letters of Sanskrit alphabet, and last but not least, the fact of totally discarding the pattern of worship, the person of Radha, in his pattern of worship, the person of Radha, who is an integral part of all the puja paddhatis written in Mathura Vrindavan region, but is totally unknown in the Kashmirian tradition, points unmistakably towards the origin of the content of the work. It is the work which later serves as the main source of the first systematic work on the daily puja ceremony of Jagannath Temple, which was produced under the orders of Gajapati Purushottama Deva in the latter part of the 15th century. A number of arguments speak in favor of Kashmir as the origin of Sharada Tilak too. Though a weak one, I would start with its title itself. The work describes the rites of puja of a number of Hindu and Hinduized Buddhist deities worshipped in the medieval ages in India, and a number of chapters are devoted to the philosophy of the tantras, as well as to the glorification of speech and the letters of the Sanskrit language, which are connected with the different tattvas of creation, as well as parts of human body. That is, ka means this, a is connected with that, e is connected with that, and ka is connected with this. La is this, va is vayu, va is varun, ya is vayu, ha is akash, la is prithvi, something. However, it is titled as Sharada Tilak, which means ornament of Sharada, the goddess Saraswati. And the word is at the same time the ancient name of Kashmir, the Sharada Desh. Kashmir was known as Sharada Desh. At least in Sanskrit literature, Billan, if you have read Billan, Vikramankadeva Charit, he writes that poetry and saffron, these two, they can grow only in Kashmir. Because you see, poetry grows playing in the fields of saffron. Should have flowers of saffron around, then it grows well. That's why I don't see good poetry flowering anywhere else. Sahodara kumkum ke saranam bhavanti nunam kavita vilasa nasharada desham apasya drishtas tesham yadanyatra maya praroha nasharada desham apasya drishtas tesham yadanyatra maya praroha. Because it is Sahodara, sibling of saffron. As a good poet, Billa. The very Mangalacharan of Sharada Tilak, alluding to Shiva Shakti and describing them as glorious splendor, which perpetually consists of pure bliss oozing out of 50 letters of Sanskrit alphabet, the one which has permeated the whole universe in the form of speech, Shabda Shakti, and its meaning, and the one which is identical with the individual consciousness, Chaitanyam Antargatam, summarizes beautifully the most salient points of the philosophy of Kashmir Shaivism. I have given the translation of the Mangalacharan verse of Sharada Tilak. If you want to listen to it, I can recite it. Nityananda Vapur Nirantaragalat Panchashadarnaih Kramat Vyaptam yena characharatmakamidam shabdartharupam jagat shabda brahma yaduchire sukritinash chaitanyamantargatam तद्वो व्यादनिशं शशांक सदनं वाचामधीशं महः. He summarizes complete Kashmir Shaivism. This very detailed description of the significance of his speech and of the letters or sounds as mothers, matrikas, not only of the mantras but of every divine and worldly phenomena, reaches its apex in the 6th and 7th sections, which describe the procedure of the worship of goddess of his speech through letters and sound in Sharada Tilak. It is followed in a very systematic manner with the description of the worship of goddesses, then Ganesh, sun god, Vishnu and Shiva, and concludes with a description of yantras for attaining various worldly objectives, and finally of yoga, which contains elements of Patanjal as well as of Kundalini yoga of the Nathas and Siddhas. The absorption of the practices of the Nathas is evident from references to them in the Tantra Lok of Abhinav Gupta, especially in his obeisance to Guru Matsyendranath. It may be noted here that sections 10th and 12th, which are titled as Twarita Prakaranam and Bhairavi Prakaranam, respectively, contain descriptions of a number of such goddesses who are not known to exist in Orissa or in South, for example, Trikantika, Vajraprastarini, Ashwarudha, etc., who are actually Tantric Buddhist goddesses. The excessive importance of the Matrikas, with a number of Nyasas on the external and internal parts of the body of the worshipper, as well as the concept of Kundalini as a transformation of letters, owes its origin ultimately to the philosophy of grammar, in which the whole creation is seen as a modification of the speech or vak. The very first verse of the Vakyapadiya of Bhartrihari puts this concept in very clear terms. Anadi nidhanam brahma shabda tattvam yadaksharam vivartate artha bhavena prakriya jagato yata. Though no certainty has yet been arrived with regard to the place of the origin of Bhartrihari, whose work is differently dated between 3rd to 5th century AD, yet to me the most likely place of its origin is Kashmir, because ultimately it is Kashmir where his philosophy is not only accepted in later works, but is also absorbed and given a practical shape in the cult practices of Vaishnava Pancharatra as well as Shaiva Shakta schools. Every cult work composed in Kashmir stresses the importance of speech and letters and considers it most central and essential part of the practice. I would therefore be inclined to place the origin of Sharada Tilak in the religious milieu and cult practices of Kashmir. As far as Orissa is concerned, we hardly find any work of importance with tantric content being written before 1400 AD, in spite of the claims of Odia scholars to the contrary. The only work of importance that Uriya has produced before 14th century is well known, Gita Govinda, 12th century. There also the Bengalis, they do not, that at loggerhead with Orissans, say that, no, it's, Jayadeva was a Bengali, not an Uriya. Sharda Tilak Kramadipika of Kashmiri Keshav Bhatt Gautamiya Tantram, which is a simple metrical paraphrase of Kramadipika, and finally Hayashirsh Pancharatra. These are thus the works which have been the prime sources of the first work on the Puja Paddhati of Purushottam Jagannath, which is called Gopalarchana Paddhati, and which was composed, as I said, during the time of Suryavanshi Purushottam Deva, 1464 to 96, in the middle of the 15th century. During the time of his son Prataparudra Deva, Chaitanya comes to Puri. But Purushottama Deva was an ardent devotee of Jagannath, and it is who, so he commissioned this work. And a source is, they took, first of all, Gautami Tantram was available there, but Gautami Tantram is just a paraphrase of Kramadipika, very simple Sanskrit, composed in Bengal. Kramadipika was the main source, and Kramadipika was composed in Kashmir, and Kramadipika has as its source Sharada Tilak, which is again is of Kashmirian origin. And for other works like the works on consecration, etc., the Orison scholars have used Hayashirsha Pancharatra, which has also originated in Kashmir. Then again, Govind Kavibhushan, your Suri Sarvaswa writer, Govind Kavibhushan, the author of one of the most scholarly works on the worship of Krishna, titled Suri Sarvaswa, completed in 1778 AD, admits his date to Sharada Tilak in very clear terms in one of the opening verses of his work. First he mentions it, that Shri Sharada Tilaka Tantrika Gautamiya Shri Pancharatra Mukhatantra Maviksha Buddhya Siddhahi Siddhi Matulam Chayayapuragre Tam Karma Yoga Padavim Avishishya Vakshe. That is how he writes at the beginning. Shri Sharada Tilaka Tantrika Gautamiya. Gautami Tantra also he mentions. The latest evidence of the influence of Kashmirian ritual literature on the ritual texts of Orissa has been supplied by an Atharva Vedic work, Angiras Kalpa, towards which first Bettina Boimer and then our Alex Sanderson have drawn our attention. This work, Angiras Kalpa, is considered to be a part of Paippalada Sanghita of Atharva Veda, which was prevalent in Orissa. It is known as among the older generation of Indologists, they call it Kashmirian Atharva Veda, this Paippalada Sanghita. But most of its manuscripts have been found from 1953 onward in Orissa, and that was the only single manuscript which was there in the Raja Ranveer Singh, in the palace of Ranveer, in the library of Ranveer Singh, who loaned it out to wrote. So this Angiras Kalp, which is a subsidiary, ancillary work to Paippalada Sanghita, this has been published under a very strange title, Vashikaranadi Shatkarma Paddhati, by Pandit Umakant Panda of Baleshwar, Odisha. After describing the well-known six harmful magical practices against enemies, etc., like Maran, Mohan, Stambhan, Vashikaran, Uchatan, etc., all these black magic practices which the tantrics usually indulge in when they don't like anyone, someone. So, Tantra can have also very negative. So, the author proceeds to state that he has described this just for the sake of knowledge of his scholars. These are very negative and sinful practices, and one should not indulge in them. If, however, one wants to attain moksha, the final liberation, one should mutter and concentrate upon the mantra Sauh of Parashakti, as explained and described in the Paratrishika, the work Paratrishika. Now this Parat Trishika is a very well-known text of Kashmir Shaivism with an erudite commentary called Vivarana by Abhinava Gupta on it. It's published twice, I think. Bettina Boimer has also published it twice. Motilal Banarsidas. Jaydev Singh has edited it, right. Though there are frequent references to Kashmir in ancient Sanskrit texts, which go so far back as to Mahabharata, yet the actual beginning of the intensive cultural and academic contacts with mainland India start actually with the military operations of the Kashmirian king Lalitaditya Muktapeed around 700 to 756 he lived. He may be termed as the second Samudragupta or an Indian Napoleon. After conquering Punjab in circa 734, he proceeds towards Kannauj, defeats its ruler Yashovarman, then marches towards Gowda, Bihar and Bengal, conquers it and wrests away the kingship from Jivagupta. He then marches southwards to Orissa and from there westward through modern Madhya Pradesh, conquers Malwa and Gujarat, renders help to Queen Ratta Mahadevi of North Karnataka, and after incessantly waging war for about 11 years, returns through Rajasthan to Kashmir when he gets information about an attack of Tibetans on his kingdom, on Kashmir. A number of scholars, poets, architects, and artisans of the conquered regions, conquered territories, accompany him back home and contribute to the already rich culture of Kashmir. Kings of Kannauj and Gaur, namely Yashovarman and Jivagupta, were also living happily in the court of Lalitaditya after his return from Deccan, reports Kallan in Rajatarangini. The grandfather of Abhinav Gupta, named Atri Gupta, who was previously attached to the court of Kannauj with Yashovarman, was also among the scholars who followed Lalitaditya to live happily ever after in Kashmir. And so the grandson, and the grandson is such a great scholar. Originally, he did not hail from Kashmir. His Kashmir, Abhinav Gupta, his father, of course, father was a Kashmirian national, Kashmirian nationality, but his grandfather came from Kannauj. So Abhinav himself mentions it in one of his writings. This opened up the traffic of students and artisans from Indian mainland to Kashmir and from Kashmir to the plains of India. Students started going to the Gurukulas of Kashmir and they returned with excellent knowledge acquired there to their homes. Scholars of mainland also visited Kashmir and an active dialogue started between the pandits of north and south. Some returned even with manuscripts in their hands. This is the reason why the commentaries on some of the fundamental texts originated in Kashmir are found written as far south as Kerala and Tamil Nadu. Now an interesting episode. Kashmirian poet Kshemendra, might have read something from him, if not, must read something. He is the greatest satirist that Sanskrit has ever produced. That Kashmirian poet Kshemendra has written many things but also satire. The greatest satirist that Sanskrit literature has ever produced describes in his Deshopadesha the habits of the students coming from Gaudadesha for his studies to Kashmir, like the people coming to Oxford. Three satirical works he has composed, Deshopadesh, Narmamala, and Darpadalan. If you catch hold of one of these rhythms. They are very interesting. So he describes the habits of the students coming from Gaudadesha. Gaudadesha is Bengal, Odisha, and Bihar for him. Now, inverted comma, what he writes. You see, they look like human skeletons when Karanka, when they come, he says. But after living for a few years and after eating good rice and rich food of Kashmir, which they get free in the Annasatras and Gurukulas of Kashmir, they cast away their old frame like a snake, its skin, its slough, and become entirely new, fresh, healthy, and well-nourished. They also amass wealth by working as priests with rich families, and thereafter they hardly pay attention to their studies but start chasing beautiful Kashmirian girls, and some even pay visit to the brothels. Horrible edict too. So this is how the academic exchange program during the days of Kshemendra, according to him, looked like, according to his personal view. But keeping the satire aside, we must assume that there were some serious students too who studied assiduously and took back knowledge and manuscripts with them. Also, the manuscripts of the works originated in the mainland reach Kashmir very soon, as the works of Anand and Mammat, namely Dhwanyalok and Kavya Prakash respectively, prove through numerous quotations in them, taken from the contemporary works of non-Kashmirian origin. Something which is produced in Malwa, Shringar Prakash, others, within 50 years it's quoted in Kashmir, or something which originates in Kashmir, Kavya Prakash, it's commented upon so soon, somewhere in Gujarat or elsewhere. And this is how the knowledge of Kashmirian thoughts and philosophy reached mainland India. Since the region of Bihar, Bengal, and Orissa, especially the last two, were great centers of tantric practices, including those of Buddhist Vajrayana, this Lalitagiri and Ratnagiri, these are the two places where you still find these great centers of Vajrayana in Orissa. We may assume that the students from Gauda mainly studied tantra and ritual there. South Indians, under the influence of acharyas like Shankar and Ramanuj, were more concerned with philosophy. Therefore, they preferred to acquire manuscripts as well as knowledge of Kashmirian philosophy. This is the reason why we find a manuscript of the Vritti of Ishwar Pratibhidnya Karika by Utpal as far away as the south of Kerala, written in Malayalam script. This has been edited by Torella of Rome, published by Motilal Banarsidas. And the Shaiva Siddhant of Karnataka Tamil Nadu region shows very clear marks of Kashmir Shaivism. So this could be the reason. And so what I wanted to say here is that the whole puja paddhati, and especially the texts like Gopala Archan Paddhati, which was composed for the first time, there were perhaps no puja paddhatis, because it's a tricky to create puja paddhatis for the trio of Jagannath, Balram and Subhadra. For Subhadra there are hardly any mantras, so Subhadra is worshipped as Vimala, a goddess. Because Subhadra was never a worshipable deity, or in Mahabharata she is not depicted as with any divine character, no correct divine characteristics at all. But she is there, so they took resource, they took recourse to some Kashmirian texts which also had these tantric elements, and especially this Purushottama was In Sharada Tilak describes this nature of Purushottama in great detail, and also gives dhyana mantras and other mantras which are used even today in the pujas of Jagannath. For Balram and Subhadra, etc., they have taken from different sources. But this Gopala Archan Paddhati is directly based on Kramadipika, and Kramadipika is based on Sharada Tilak. And Sharada Tilak is of Kashmirian origin. And other ritual, this occasional festival rituals, they are based mostly on Haishirsha Pancharatra, which is also of Kashmirian origin. So thank you very much for patiently listening to me.